You can choose to be what you've never been, do what you've never done, and win what you've never won before. Be inspired to do more, to be more. Read Soul of a Lifter by Gino R. Carroll. Softcover and ebooks are available on Amazon.com and GinoRCarroll.com.
This is Blunt Talk, your source for good inspirational news only. With your host, Gino R. Carroll.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Blunt Talk Podcast. We're broadcasting today from the basement floor of my gym, X Fitness, Welland, Ontario, Canada. X Fitness is committed to lift, to the celebration of good inspirational news only. Ladies and gentlemen, there's enough depressing news. We won't contribute to it. Today's guest is Larae Kwai from San Francisco, California, retired FBI agent and author. But first, our motivational speech of the day called Fed Up, Dual Meaning. This is part of a series on Blunt Talk Podcast called Live Vicariously or Live Furiously, a message that I've taught my football players and college students for over two decades. Make your own moment, ladies and gentlemen, or watch others make theirs. Be a player or be a spectator in life. Sit in the stands or play the game. Both decisions have a cost. The choice to live vicariously or live furiously depends on what price you're willing to pay. One costs more than the other, and that's the concept of being fed up. Multiple meanings. Here's real life lesson number 1122 that I've taught my football players for 40 years and college law enforcement students for two decades. How much you're fed up determines how much you get fired up. Now, there's multiple meanings to that. First meaning, fed up means you are full. You have fed yourself to capacity. Once you are fed up, you have lost your hunger. Without hunger, you will never get fired up. Second meaning, you and your team will never change for the better until you are fed up with being worse. You will never get fired up until you are fed up with losing, last place, and being the laughingstock of the league. Without getting fired up, you will get burned up in the darkest place that will torment your soul. That place is called underachieving hell. That's the title of a new book I'm writing. Underachieving hell has to be escaped from before you get fired on any field or in any field. There are a number of strategies that help you get fired up. The list is too long for this podcast, but here's one strategy. Lift, dual meaning. Lift weights, lift souls. Both build strength. Strength is our greatest natural resource. Here's an excerpt from my book called Fourth in Hell, Season 2. We are born weak, but we are not intended to stay weak. Weakness is the main cause of individual and team failure by whatever definition of failure you decide to use. I've devoted an entire book called Soul of a Lifter as a solution to weakness. Here's an excerpt from Soul of a Lifter. There is no greater reward than soul lifting by putting up ladders for others. Soul lifting gives you the greatest lifter's high, the natural rush that detoxifies mind, body, and soul. Here's what I have reminded my players and law enforcement students every single day for decades. If you're too caught up inside yourself to lift, by both meanings, think of those who will gladly take your place. The sick, the dying, the hungry, the homeless. Here's another excerpt from Soul of a Lifter. Be more or be less, it's your biggest decision today. Top 1000 workout song of the day, ladies and gentlemen, Born to Run by Bruce Springsteen, released way back in 1975, my sixth year of my 47-year workout streak. It's a masterpiece. I don't live in the past, but I visit the past every single workout. Every workout connects the past, the present, and the future. What was, what is, what will be. Train like your life depends on it. Train for those who depend on you. $1.29 on iTunes. Guaranteed to lift. From San Francisco, California, welcome to Blunt Talk Podcast, Larae Kwai.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Thank you, Larae, for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us on Blunt Talk Podcast. Larae, we start off every podcast with the same traditional question. Our worldwide audience tunes in to hear the summary of our guest's professional journey, where they came from, where they are today, with the hope of inspiring them to reach their full potential. Larae, can you share with us a summary of your professional journey, where you came from and where you are today?
Well, absolutely. I would have to say where I came from. I would want to go all the way back to where I was born and raised, and that was on a cattle ranch in Wyoming. So a great deal of what I understand to be mental toughness and grit and success comes from the lessons I learned back then. But I went to a school, I got a degree in business, and like a lot of women, I love to shop. So when I took a job into an executive management program at a very large department store and thought, hey, wow, you know, this would be great. I ended up being a buyer. I hated it. I'll just tell you. I came home at the end of the day, and the biggest thing I could boast of was that I tried to persuade some woman to buy a striped blouse instead of a polka dot one. I mean, it was just that in names for me in a way. And I decided to go back and get my master's degree. And I was at Arizona State University working on my degree when the FBI came on campus. And I thought, wow, okay, I should try that. I mean, why not? What do I got to lose? I hate where I'm at now. It just wasn't fulfilling for me, and it certainly wasn't challenging. So I just interviewed, and they sat and they listened to my story, and they liked it. They liked the fact that I wasn't some entitled kid expecting something handed to them on a platter, and I was hired. So 6 months later, I found myself in the FBI Academy, and it was a rough time getting through the academy. It's on the Quantico Marine Corps base. It's not exactly like boot camp, but not that far from it. And spent 24 years, actually, as an FBI agent, primarily working counterintelligence and espionage cases. And I also worked quite a few undercover cases. And when I was eligible to retire after 24 years, I was loving what I was doing, but I just knew it was time for a change. I didn't want to be my past due date. And so often I think we just stay in a place because it's comfortable. And so I'd always wanted to write. I knew I really would have a hard time making a living as a writer. So I said, okay, now when I've got my retirement in my back pocket, let me try to live off my skills for a while. So I started writing, and I've published two books. And so now I am a writer and an executive coach, and I also do a lot of corporate training.
Larae, let's start off with law enforcement. Law enforcement, in my opinion, it will change you in many different ways, both for the better, sometimes not for the better, because it exposes you to every kind of experience that there is in society. When I was 18, I got hired as a police officer. I quit 15 years later at the age of 33. I was blessed to have been a police officer, and I taught law enforcement for 20 years. And I have never, not once, romanticized the profession to college students or anybody who's asked me for advice. I've told them the truth. It will change you in positive ways, but if you're not careful, it will have a negative effect. Pretty much the same can be said for any profession. But with law enforcement, there is an obligation to be at your best, always. But you're dealing with circumstances that brings out the human factor. No matter what, there's a human factor in split-second decisions that cannot ever be trained for You have to develop instincts, intuition. Here's my question. Can you give us your opinion, your advice to those who want to get into law enforcement, or those who simply need to get an inside view into the law enforcement mind, because it's at the forefront today? What are some of the factors involved? Does it change people? How does it change people? What's your opinion?
Well, it's an interesting question, particularly right now with our political situation. It's interesting because as an FBI agent, I upheld federal laws, and free speech is a federal law. You have the right to stand up and express yourself. And I've been in a situation where I had to defend protesters, where the people that they were perhaps denigrating or harassing were saying, my civil rights have been violated. And I said, yes, but their civil rights would be violated if I arrested them. It's interesting, though, now where it morphs from simply free speech to hate speech. And that is something quite different. And in this political environment, I think people are not quite educated on what hates the difference between the two. But as far as how law enforcement can change you, I have found it strengthened me. And I can see where you would say, you know, some people may not find it the challenge that they particularly want. But I found strength, actually, in clarity. In clarity in the values that I believed in. And when you go into law enforcement, at least when the FBI, it is you are a public servant. And when you take that look at it and that attitude, you have to really believe in the laws that you're enforcing. You have to believe that they're fair. You have to enact them in a way that's fair. So if that isn't at the forefront of your mind when you go into law enforcement of any kind, then it's probably not the right place for you. Because if it's a power thing, or I've seen this, you know, oh, I get to carry a gun. Well, you know what? With a gun comes a lot of responsibility, and you have to be sure that you're mature enough to be able to handle it.
Lorraine, you brought up an interesting question about the attitudes of those who want to become a police officer, federal agent, whatever it is in law enforcement. During 20 years of being a college law enforcement professor and program coordinator, I saw with my own eyes a wide range of attitudes, from terrific attitudes to not so terrific attitudes. And there's actually empirical research that backs that up, that says that law enforcement actually attracts candidates from the widest range of psychological characteristics, because it actually is proportionate to the job. The job has a wide arena. It's an arena that encompasses the whole world. It encompasses good, bad, in between. I have seen some horrible attitudes about why people want to get into law enforcement at the college level, and I've seen some great attitudes. But that could be said for a lot of professions. One of my toughest jobs as college law enforcement professor was changing that attitude into a healthy attitude about getting into law enforcement. And you mentioned a great word about the change, which I agree with wholeheartedly, strength. I call it reps. Repeated exposure to pressure and stress builds strength. In 15 years in law enforcement, I left for a number of reasons, and one of them has to do with I wasn't thrilled with my workplace anymore. I loved my job, but I didn't love my workplace anymore, and I didn't feel like being controlled for the rest of my life with decisions that I didn't agree with. It had to do with decisions about my own career. That was my choice. I left after 6 years in the detective office, after 9 years of being in uniform, and my point of the matter is that you have to make a lot of choices before getting hired in law enforcement. And if you are successful to get hired in law enforcement, you have to protect that job because you are serving the public. My goodness, this has got to be the longest question in the history of podcasting. Here's my question. What kind of training do you advise those who want to get into law enforcement? Because I've spent over 2 decades when I was a college law enforcement professor. I left in 2010, but I spent 2 decades telling Every single student, hundreds and hundreds and tens of thousands. You've got to build yourself up, mind, body, and soul, academically, physically, psychologically. It's not easy, but it has to be done. You don't have to be a super action hero, but you've got to build yourself up. And it's a mind, body, and soul building up. What advice do you have for law enforcement candidates about how to train to get hired?
Sure. I will say, first of all, that I think everybody, and this, no matter what career you're talking about, law enforcement in this particular instance, but really any career, is that you definitely need to have enough self-awareness to understand that this is your path, that this is your journey. And so often, and especially as I talk a lot about mental toughness, people just envision, they put law enforcement in that same category, some sort of bulldozer that just plows their way through trouble and problems. And that may work in football in a certain situation, but it does not work in business and life. And for the most part, no matter what profession you're in, it's understanding yourself well enough to be self-aware. And that's considered to be a soft skill by a lot of people. They'd rather have, you know, the muscles, and that's important. Not saying it's not, but that mental attitude that you have alluded to previously is every bit as important. And so that's the first place. You just have to know that that is your path. And second of all, mindset and attitude. Again, when I talk about mental toughness, I talk about self-awareness. I talk about resilience. I talk about willpower. I also talk about mindset, which is your attitude, because attitude affects everything. It affects the way you look at the situations that show up in your life, and it affects the way you're going to resolve them. So we've all been around pessimists, and there's some, I love a lot of pessimists, but they are self-aware enough to know they are a pessimist. So this mindset is one of always improving, identifying where your weaknesses are. Instead of trying to run away from them, just acknowledge what they are. There's great power when you do that. When you admit to yourself that, hey, this is not my strong point. It does no good to try to deny it or suppress it. Instead, find something to counter that. A strength that you have, build on that. And I would say that would be my advice for any career, particularly with law enforcement, because as you said, we are public servants. And certainly as an FBI agent, I feel we were held to a higher standard of behavior and in conduct. So, and I find most people expect us to adhere to a higher standard as well.
Larae, much of law enforcement, in my opinion, deals with decision-making, life and death decision-making, and most often it's split second. You can prepare in some investigations. You can't prepare for a 911 call generally. You can't prepare for a domestic in progress. You can't prepare for a break and enter in progress generally. You can draw on your experience, but those specific circumstances usually are right there in the moment where you have very little preparation time in mind, body, and soul. Decisions, I believe, and what I've taught my own students, decisions, rapid decision-making is a skill that is vital to the calling of law enforcement. And the calling of law enforcement is serve and protect. That's not just a nice little slogan for the side of a cruiser or for a website. Serving and protecting, I believe, is our universal calling. It doesn't matter what field or on any field, you serve and protect. Now, to serve and protect, there's so many different traits, so many different characteristics. It's not easy. It's a complexity of psychological factors that have to go in there, as you said. Decision-making, sometimes, because of the human factor, makes for controversy. Split-second decisions deals with the conscious mind, the subconscious mind, all the experiences that have been stored up and wired up, our neural pathways, how we exercise our free will is largely determined by our muscle memory. All right, here's my point. Rapid decision making is a central character in all of my academic textbooks. When I left policing, I wrote 20 editions of 6 academic textbooks, and I tried to inject real life into them. Now I'm writing non-academic textbooks, and I've written a book called Midnight Shift from Hell, where I've taken one seemingly routine call, and I try to give a reader, especially those who want to get into law enforcement, an inside look into the psychology of just one call where there is the potential of violence and how split-second decisions are made on both sides. The person who is committing the crime and the person who's trying to crime fight. My question to you is, those decisions, those split-second decisions that are then dissected, analyzed by courts, the public, the media, the scrutiny that is necessary, the oversight that is necessary in law enforcement. Can you give your commentary, your opinion on that decision-making process, those split-second decisions that are often life and death? How did you manage it? How does society look upon those decisions? How can we make things better? What is your opinion?
Well, I think basically, from the way we're taught as FBI agents, and encouraged, first of all, you have to be curious. Curiosity is an incredibly valuable characteristic. You have to be curious about the people around you, not paranoid, but curious and aware. Self-awareness I talked about, also awareness of others and awareness of what's going on around you. So I would put curiosity right there at the top. And the other thing that I've been taught to do is continually make myself a learner. In other words, always having a petri dish where there's all sorts of little experiments growing, where you don't know the answer, where you're not sure you're going to have the right answer, or you know how you can't predict how you respond. Because only by putting yourself intentionally in situations where you're new, where you're not using your expertise, you don't know what your expertise is, will you gain a better awareness of how you will respond when confronted with the unknown. Mm-hmm. Are you the type that will just, you know, plow forward first? Well, that may not be the best response in every situation, but only by continually placing yourself in new, experimental, different situations will you gain an understanding of what your first reflex is. And when you do that, you simply become more aware of what you do right and maybe what you don't do so right. And as you said, you can't predict every experience, every situation, every call. But you can predict your response by continually putting yourself in situations where you are the beginner, where you are the learner. And it can be tough on the ego, very tough on the ego, because, you know, we know where we do well and, you know, where we exceed, and that makes us feel good. It's very comfortable. But truly, if we want to keep growing, which we should all strive for, if we want to do that, we need to continually place that goal a little bit further beyond our grasp. And that will always leave us a little uncertain. But only by being comfortable with that can we really start to understand, okay, this is my pattern. This is how I can predict how I will respond.
Lorraine, I've been asked a number of times in my life, what's it like changing careers? I've changed careers from law enforcement to college teaching. I left college teaching, became a full-time business owner, an entrepreneur. I own my own gym. I write. I coach football. It's not easy to change careers. I don't romanticize that to anybody, because I tell everyone, if you want to change careers, here's my own personal advice. It's one of the biggest decisions you're going to make in your life, but it's deeply personal. I don't tell people to leave their job. I don't tell people to stay in their job. I tell them to soul search. Search inside. Make your own decision, because I've been blessed that I had synchronicity guide me. I had divine messages guide me about when it was time to leave my jobs. That, in essence, I probably overstayed both, but I knew it was time to leave, meaning I didn't regret my decision. I didn't leave too soon, and I didn't leave too late. You leave too soon, you're going to regret it. In both occupations, I did what I set out to do, but I knew it was time to move on to another mission. So what I try to tell people is, This is a deeply personal decision. That's my own advice. What advice do you give to people? In our worldwide audience, I will guarantee you there are people who either love their work, don't love their work, but are thinking of career changes. And career changes brings on fear, brings on anxiety, brings on tension. What advice do you give to people based on your own experience about having left an occupation? Does it leave you with anxiety? Does it leave you with tension? How did you handle it?
Well, it does leave you with anxiety. I mean, absolutely. Nothing is a sure thing. I think what I really came to terms with when I left the retail job was that probably 80% of what I was doing had to do with number crunching and stuff like that. And it had never been a favorite topic of mine. I was never really cared for accounting. And details are not really my thing. I'm more of a kind of a bigger vision type person. And so I sort of instinctively knew that I was just in the wrong career path. But a lot of times people don't really know, and they sit there and they sort of go, I want to follow my passion. I want to follow my passion. And I'm just going, oh my God, would you know your passion if it hit you over the head? And a lot of times they don't. And so my biggest piece of advice is to experiment a little bit. Get out there. I mean, if you're not sure what you're doing now looks good for you, then try something different. Experiment. There's nothing wrong with experimenting and looking at different aspects of a job. Instead of just hoping to find something that just is wonderful, chances of that happening are pretty rare, actually. I think some of the worst advice I ever got was follow your passion, because unfortunately I found out the hard way that just because I was passionate about something didn't mean I wouldn't suck at it. So I would say this: if you're passionate about something, of course you should pursue it. But I think here's the really big question: to what end? Because at some point in your life, you're going to need to see yourself. You're going to need to see your legacy, right? What did you do to put back into your community to help other people? So it's not always about having a passion. It's about doing something with your life that will benefit others. That point is exactly why I left retail. I could not see what I was doing with my life that would benefit others. And so I did. I looked around, and I knew that some things I should avoid, i.e. one of them was the career I was in. But then again, I started kind of experimenting, you know, because you don't know what will capture your attention until you're in it. And that's the thing. When you stand from afar and expect something perfect to land in your lap, I think that's called fantasy, actually. And so sometimes you really need to work at it. I read somewhere someone said, you know, when you focus on everything you dislike about your work, job satisfaction really drops. But by contrast, if you have this mindset that acknowledges that no matter what field you're in, success is always about quality. So start focusing on the quality of work you're doing rather than what is right or not right for you. And that's where you are now. And as far as I just was talking to someone the other day about their potential decision to go into the FBI. And I said, you know, you're doing the right thing. Talk to people who have been in the FBI, because believe me, what you see in movies and TV is not, or read in books, is not accurate. So talk to different people, no matter whether it's law, you know, a police department or a federal agency, whatever it has to be, collect information. Do those informational interviews so you kind of get an idea of what you're getting into.
What's been your biggest challenge in counterintelligence?
My biggest challenge in counterintelligence, I would say probably working undercover. Because undercover by its nature requires you to sort of shed your identity, right? And I actually, the only time I really got into trouble working undercover was when I tried to be somebody I wasn't. And it wasn't in counterintelligence. It was actually against organized crime. And I worked under organized crime for a few years when I first started out. And I was invited to be this guy who was working undercover. I was supposed to be his arm charm. I was just, you know, to go along as to accompany him to a barbecue. And he was, you know, he was deep into this organized crime group. At least he thought he was. And so I got there and I switched my, traded off my gun that day for a fake undercover ID and showed up. And it was a summer, it was a barbecue, and I have blonde hair and very fair skin. I need to go get sunscreen. So I went into the house to get sunscreen, which was in my handbag. And when I walked into this room, there were a couple of women in there going through my bag and tried to pretend nothing was wrong, you know, but then a couple of really ugly guys followed me in and they shut the door. So it was me and these women and these guys who had a reputation of being extortionists, thugs, and occasionally murderers, right? And they started asking all kinds of questions about who I was and how I got there and who was that clueless guy that I had come to the barbecue with. And it was a real come to Jesus kind of moment, because I knew right then and there I needed to just drop all the tough shit, you know? I just needed to drop all that stuff and be who I truly was. I didn't tell them my name. But all of a sudden, I told them about growing up on a cattle ranch. I told them about working at retail, a job I hated. I told them about, needing to leave the little confines of my community because I just felt fenced in. And I was as honest as I could be about who I was, except giving them my real name. And I got out of that room unharmed. The other guy that I came with, they actually put a hit out on him, and the FBI had to transfer him to another city. But again, the only time I ever ran into problems was when I tried to be somebody I wasn't. So that was the big lesson, the big takeaway I took from working undercover.
From one author to another, my congratulations and compliments in writing two books, because I equate writing books to physical workouts. It's an intellectual workout, and it's very easy to quit. I've read studies. My own publisher actually gave me a study way back in the 90s that sometimes in excess of 90% of manuscripts go unfinished because people quit. They just quit halfway through. It's that tough. Can you give our worldwide audience a summary of what your books are about?
Absolutely. My first book is called Secrets of a Strong Mind, and it is basically sort of the story of my life. I start off with stories about when I was 10 years old and had a bull charge at me, and I go through the training academy, which was not easy. I had a very difficult time with the physical fitness part. I go through my career as working criminal matters initially, and then counterintelligence. And eventually I was the spokesperson for the FBI in Northern California for 4 years. And so we moved through that. So that is what the first book is about, and learning about what the strong mind is all about. The persistence, the determination, the willpower, the authenticity, all the things that go into building a strong mind, the secrets of a strong mind. The second book is called Mental Toughness for Women Leaders. And here's the big secret there. It's for men too. I mean, there's really no different way that men and women process the information that I talk about in my book. So it's just based in neuroscience. I do a lot of research to back up about ways that we can control our emotions and our thoughts and behaviors in ways that will set them up for success.
Lorraine, we end every podcast with a traditional question. We ask every guest to imagine that right now you have an audience that includes every single human being on planet Earth. We live in a wonderful world, but it becomes increasingly complex. People have lifted us up in the past. Now it's our turn to reciprocate. Can you give us your inspirational message that would lift this entire planet?
I would say you do not need to be born with talent to be a success. While your natural talents may determine which path you actually take, they will not ensure your success. You need the self-awareness, the resilience, the willpower, and the mindset to get you to the next level in life and business. And that is called mental toughness.
Amen. Well said. Lorraine, can you give our worldwide audience your contact information, where they can contact you as a speaker, where they can buy your books.
Absolutely. You can find either book, Secrets of a Strong Mind, or Mental Toughness for Women Leaders, 52 Tips, on Amazon. You can get them either in Kindle or in paperback. And if you want to learn more about me, simply go to my website, and it's www.lorraiquai.com.
Lorrai, thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be a guest here on Blunt Talk Podcast and share your professional insights. Very inspiring. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in. Blessings and all good things. Peace.
Please join us next episode as we speak with Memphis Spence. He's a sports radio director.